Alrighty, one last introduction to a new course. This is going to be an introduction to evidence. Evidence is something that is really fun because it's the makings of whether or not you find somebody guilty of a crime, or whether or not you find that a contract has been formed or not, whether somebody was in breach of a contract or committed a tort. Evidence is the making of telling this story of what actually happened. And I apologize in advance, most of my talking in this episode is going to be more disorganized. I'm just going to talk about evidence generally to provide an overview of what it is and how it functions, and we'll go from there when it comes to future episodes as well. Future episodes, our next one, we're actually going to be talking about relevance, which is whether or not the evidence is relevant and how those rules apply. We won't talk about those in this episode, though. Okay, so the purpose of a trial is obviously to understand an event of what happened, and what tools can we use to understand what happened? Well, the tools that we use is going to be evidence. Evidence, however, is going to be limited by the court. The judge is going to act as a gatekeeper to determine what evidence is allowed and what evidence is not allowed. And we can see this underneath the Federal Rules of Evidence number 611. But why is the evidence limited? Well, there are several reasons. Some are going to be obvious and others are not going to be so obvious. The main obvious reason is that we want the trial to end. We don't want it to be repetitive, allowing each side to submit piece after piece of the exact same thing, and to do so unnecessarily. The ironic reason, though, why we limit evidence is because we deeply mistrust juries. We don't expect them to understand all the evidence. We expect them to get confused. We expect them to be misled or be disinterested in certain evidence. And the ironic part about this statement is that even though we deeply mistrust juries during the trial process, we put heavy, heavy weight on the jury verdict. The jury verdict, except for in very rare circumstances, is going to be considered final. We defend that verdict, and we defend the reasoning of the jury in determining what that verdict is, regardless of whether or not there are questions about that reasoning and whether that reasoning was improper. And we'll talk more about the jury verdict in a minute, but I do want to talk a little bit more about how the jury is given this information and what evidence really acts as of doing. Well, there are two certain things that you can have, two different types of evidence. You can have observations, and you can have inferences. Observations are things that you can see and describe, but there are issues with observations. It can approach certainty, but it can never actually be certain. And that's because eyewitness accounts can be misleading, can be mistrusting. You can't always believe everything that you see with your eyes. And that's why a lot of convictions actually occur based off of poor eyewitness testimony, because people didn't see what they thought they saw. So observations can be somewhat misleading. The other type of inference is going to be, evidence are going to be inferences. And there is the scale of inferences. There's poor inferences and there's positive inferences. The more information you have, the more positively you're going to be able to identify the story. The less information you have, the less inferences you can make, or rather, the more mistakes your inferences are likely to make. And so how do you understand or develop this inference story? Well, you just ask people, you put piece by piece together, and you follow this logical progression to understand what the story is actually talking about. Okay. One last note before I talk more about juries and how juries are important. I want to give you an overview of how my notes are going to be structured throughout this topic. And when I say this topic, again, I mean the topic of evidence, not just this episode. I'm going to give you a heading, so to speak, introducing the topic. I'll give you a heading denoting the rules associated with that topic. And then there will be smaller headings of principles and cases that are going to be used to support the rule. So, for example, in this episode, this is an introduction, so that's our heading describing the topic. Our rule associated with this is going to be Federal Rule of Evidence number 606. This is the weight that we put on the jury deliberations and why we don't let juries testify as to the jury deliberations very often. And then we have other headings underneath that. The cases that we'll use to prove this is going to be Tanner versus United States, Warger versus Showers, and Pina Rodriguez versus Colorado. Those are going to be our three last cases that we would talk about to describe this Rule 606. Rule 606 denotes the finality of a case and its limits. And what it does is that it limits the jury testimony except for when the testimony is going to expound on influence that occurred outside of the jury. Again, the whole point of talking about this rule is to describe the finality of a case and what evidence we won't allow when it comes to jury testimony. If there are a testimony that's coming from about the jury deliberations, it must come from court personnel, and that's going to be observing the public actions of a jury. Tanner versus United States, what happened here is that the defendant was convicted, and after the conviction, a jury member came to the attorney and said, "Hey, I saw some jury members using drugs during the courtroom. It caused them to sleep through a lot of the discussions. I don't think it's fair that he got a conviction." So the attorney asked for a stay, asked for a hearing, and asked if he could interview jury members to determine what was going on, and asked for a new trial because of this information. He was denied on all counts. He was not allowed to investigate jury members, and despite this interview rule, or lack thereof, lack of ability to interview jurors, another jury member approached Tanner's attorney and said, "Hey, it was more than just a little drinking. It was a whole party. It was a riot. I saw drugs. I saw alcohol. It was pretty intense." And with this information, again, the attorney went and tried to appeal. And the whole point was saying that this was an improper use of a jury and wanted to give him a fair trial and said, "Look, the Sixth Amendment is being implicated at this point. There's not a fair jury trial, and my client has a right to a fair jury trial." Well, what did the Supreme Court say? They said, "Nope, no dice, I'm sorry." The reason for this is for a couple of reasons. The first reason is because the only things and that can be discussed is going to be through... Well, the only things that a jury member could give testimony of is going to be outside influences. And alcohol, in this case, the majority considers it to be an inside influence, much like a mental capacity. And consequently, testimony of alcohol consumption cannot be used to impeach a jury decision. There are protections that were also in place to afford Sixth Amendment certainty. They could have made observations during the trial. The court personnel could testify of this. It doesn't have to be a jury member. And jury members could come forth before the verdict actually occurs and not after the deliberations and verdict is read. The dissent agrees with the reasoning but disagrees on the timing. They say that Rule 606 discusses any influence on the jury deliberations, and many of these actions that was occurring actually happened outside of the deliberation room, happened during the presentation of the trial. And so they say this testimony should have been allowed because some of the actions occurred outside the deliberation room. But that was no dice because it's it was not presented before, according to the majority. The majority stuck to their rule for four main reasons, policy reasons. You want to ensure that the jury deliberations are good, so that they can deliberate without fear or oversight. It protects jurors from harassment by lawyers or the public. It ensures the finality of verdicts, and then it maintains community trust in jury verdicts. And that last one's a little iffy because jury trust in verdicts where the verdict was made by tons of alcohol and drug consumption can be a little iffy on whether or not they came to the right conclusion. And like I mentioned, they still want to ensure that the constitutionally protected rights are afforded to the parties, and the protections that you have that are afforded through the system. So you have voir dire, which is where you question and eliminate jurors. You observe the jury during trial. The jury can report other jurors before the verdict, or non-jurors can report jurors of misconduct at any time. So in that situation, you cannot use the information to impeach the verdict. Warger versus Showers, this was another example of the outcome. You cannot use the information to impeach the verdict. The situation here, Warger was involved in a motorcycle accident. One of the jury members, and actually it was the foreman, said if his daughter was sued, he said that his daughter was involved in a car accident, and if that she was sued, it would have ruined her life. And the attorney heard this after the verdict had been made, and tried to appeal the verdict, saying, look, this was an outside influence, and it was dishonesty that actually occurred during the trial. The judge said no to both these things because this could have been reported again for those same constitutional protections that were made before. You have voir dire, you can observe during, you can have jury reporting during, or you can have non-jurors report. And so ultimately, even though the juror was dishonest and biased, there were still these protections to catch that bias before it should have been a problem. It was just unfortunate for the plaintiff in this situation that those were not caught beforehand. However, the court did reserve the right to discuss this with other situations, for other types of bias, I should say, and specifically racial bias. And that's where Pina Rodriguez versus Colorado came into play. After a verdict, again, a jury came and approached an attorney saying that one of the jurors had exhibited several comments of racial bias against the defendant. At trial and on the initial appeal, the court said that this cannot be admitted because of Tanner. But this was overturned at the Supreme Court level because it was a violation to the Sixth Amendment right to a fair and impartial jury. Sorry. And so to qualify to meet the exception to Rule 606, racial animus must be shown to be a significant factor that actually led to the outcome of the jury verdict. Offhand comments of racial bias, or just people saying things that they don't know what they're saying, is not going to qualify for this exception. The dissent argues, though, that by allowing this one exception, other exceptions are going to arise on the same basis of other protected classes, such as sex or religion. And so ultimately, the dissent believes that this should not have been allowed. Okay, so what are our takeaways from this introduction of what evidence is? Evidence is the process of collecting truth of an event, understanding what actually happened. This truth collection evidence is going to be made either through observations or by making inferences and telling the jury to that that information. The judge is the person who is going to be the gatekeeper of this information, limiting information, allowing information, depending on the judge, determines how much gets in, how much does not get in at the pre-evident, well, pre-trial hearing, and then during the trial as well. And then we talked about the reliance of the jury members on this evidence and whether or not the jury members could provide evidence as to improper jury deliberations. Those were big takeaways or big discussions of this episode. I'm excited for evidence, and next time we'll talk about relevance. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is, if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials. And the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is, if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.